Cameron, welcome back to Open Air.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for your interest.
Well, you're here with your own international touring organ, an instrument I believe that you had a great deal of input in creating.
I designed it. Yeah. It's my, it's both my chosen organ and also my statement about what the organ should be today.
And I understand that you've sampled a lot of the great organs of the world to include as part of the sounds of that organ.
I wouldn't say the great organs of the world. The organ is exclusively American. It's my position that the pipe organ reached its zenith in America, not in Europe, by dint of American ingenuity and the application of electricity and other factors to pipe organ engineering and design in the very few last days of the 19th century and the first 40 years or so of the 20th. And it's that era of organ building that has motivated me as a musician. It's what compelled me to want to learn the organ and to be an organist. And it also has driven my lifelong obsession with the instrument. And so, rather than, for instance, the any certain specific era of church organ building or the Baroque organ or some of the organs which are, you know, the fashionable kind of organ today is this sort of grossly eclectic, neo-Baroque pipe organ or whatever. That's not the instrument for me that's most fascinating, or indeed for me the most musical or practical. It's the early to mid-century, you know, American school of organ building, and that's what I've emulated here. But all of the sounds from this instrument come from American organs, so there's no European sound in the instrument. It's made in America.
And as good as the acoustics and the sound system that you've employed here for the International Touring Organ, which I understand there's one here and there's one in Europe, I don't think anyone will confuse the acoustic with that of a great cavernous Notre Dame or Chartres.
No, but there's no reason that that should be implicit in the expectation of any organ music. the inclusion of organs in cavernous acoustic spaces is incidental to the identity of the instrument itself. That's not to say that it isn't an enormously contributive factor. There's a great organ here in town at Grace Cathedral, but our idea that the organ can only be understood in the context of giant naves and domes is absurd. The organ is an instrument of architecture as well as of music, so naturally it has a great many iterations in its form. In fact, iteration is a word that is appropriate in the use in discussion of the organ, because the organ is probably the only instrument that can really be argued to be fractal, in the sense that it exhibits not only self-similarity within the instrument, which is to say that an organ properly understood is composed of other organs, which are themselves composed of stops, which of course fulfill in most cases the definition of what an organ is, just as their corollary is true because there are organs that have very few stops or even only one stop. But also in that, since all pipe organs are unique and site-specific, if you consider the organ, capital T, capital O, to mean not the organ in, you know, as the sum of all pipe organs or all organs that exist, or of any organ in particular, but rather of the organ as an idea, which is what I would argue that it is, then it's very clear to see that the organ, if what an organ is the application of a series of sonic and mathematical and artistic principles, then the organ is also much like a fractal, which, as Benoit Mandelbrot pointed out, gives us the ability to see bottomless wonders which spring from simple rules applied without end, which is also a very apt description of practice, by the way. So you can view the idea of the organ as the formula which generates the fractal, and the individual organs as the individual, unique, and potentially infinite you know, iterations of that fractal.
I have to ask you about the actual sounds that will be coming from the organ. You mentioned that they're uniquely American organ sounds. Are they only organ sounds, or are there also electronic sounds that you've incorporated, rather like a synthesizer?
No, there's no synthesis in the instrument. Though it's, of course, MIDI capable, we don't employ any MIDI technology. We don't connect any outboard synthesizers or anything like that. It would be very easy to assemble some sort of mishmash composite instrument that pulled sounds and from all sorts of different origins. But actually, you know, that's not my focus at all. My focus here was to use the technology that's available to us to build an organ in the traditional form, even though the form that my organ takes may seem non-traditional to the casual observer. It's actually a very traditional organ. It exhibits totally thoroughgoing organization internally that's not that different from, again, the early 20th century pipe organ on a large scale. It's basically follows the format of most university organs. That is to say, a big American classic style organ which has been hybridized with aspects of the cinema organ, particularly as it was built by Wurlitzer and some others, including Kimball. But the effort here has been not to focus on multiplicity of sound, but simply the origin of sound. Because the thing is, that once you're in the digital domain, and once it's a foregone conclusion, as it, in my view, are long since has been, certainly now is, especially in the case of this instrument, that we can basically access an unlimited amount of data and processing, then the only question is that of provenance. You know, what is the provenance of the sound that you're going to create? In other words, at some level there has to enter some kind of base standard of calibration for what the instrument is. And for me, that calibration comes from the organ. It doesn't come from outside the organ. So there are percussion sounds that are sometimes used in the instrument. Those are present because of their previous inclusion in theater organs in the 1920s. And the only percussion elements that are present in the organ are those which would have been found in a representative instrument from that school. So again, because it hybridizes the theater organ to a small degree into the context of the extremely eclectic American concert organ, you do have some non-organ sounds, but they're kind of non-organ sounds within the concept of the organ because they're included by dint of their inclusion in other pipe organs.
You mentioned the Grace Cathedral organ. Have you had a chance, and you've played, of course, the Davies Symphony Hall organ. Have you played on any of the other institutional organs of San Francisco, and do you have a favorite?
Well, no. My organ is my favorite, and as it should be. SF Jazz presented me at Grace Cathedral several years ago, and I had a long standing relationship with the San Francisco Symphony, and I've played at Davies Hall many times. And actually, the Davies Hall organ, in that I began that relationship and first, you know, played my first recital around the time that I started playing my first recitals at Disney Hall, too. That was before I moved to Berlin, Germany, so that was like in 2006, 2007, 2008. So, you know, my entree into getting to play in San Francisco was Davies Hall. So I that's a place that's quite special to me. And the Castro Theater, of course, is another institutional organ in town with which I'm familiar, and one that's quite dear to me in the sense that it's another place where they're all too rarely, I'm sorry to say, where the institution and the organist and the powers that be have heavily backed the concept of the digital organ and are completely reinventing a historical instrument with the use of modern technology, which is exactly what they should do. And they're creating the world's largest theater organ there. So that's, you know, that's a place that San Franciscans should know about and support, because it's a place where organ building is taking place not with you know, broad thumbs and creased foreheads and ancient practices, but with actually modern and new attempts to redefine what an organ is. both have to coexist.
Well, we hope we'll have you back to sample the new Castro Theater organ once it's in place. Be great.
Yeah.
You did mention that Berlin is now your home. You were raised in Pennsylvania, educated in, among other places, North Carolina and the Juilliard School. Why do you make Berlin your home now?
Well, I lived in New York for 10 years, and then it became time to make a change. And that, when I moved there, it was in 2010. It was the great realization that was dawning on me was that to fulfill any of the to even try to fulfill my ambitions for my career and my life, I needed to have my own instrument, and also a deep realization that I had access to and the conviction to regard the digital organ as the absolute superior in the organ building. And that nobody else is going to take that position or even remotely believed that it was even defensible. Most organs would not take that position seriously now, and many don't. But the idea that the organ has to be a physical entity is a repulsive idea to me. And it's repulsive because literality is repulsive. It's a very, particularly in artistic matters, to stop at the realm of the literal in your inquiry is disaster, because it forbids a closer, deeper understanding, and I think also a sense of ownership over, be it a work, an instrument, whatever. It may seem megalomaniacal to some, and I know that it does, but actually, the organist is a megalomaniacal character and should be. I don't necessarily mean personally, but I mean in terms of the actual hierarchy of information and what's going on in the playing of the organ. The organ, unlike other instruments, properly understood, an organ attempts to be all solutions to all musical problems. In other words, the organ is a system that assumes a certain kind of input. It assumes a certain given musical context, and it utilizes musical time, physics, pitch structures that are outside the ken of other instruments, outside the range, not just physically or in terms of musical range, although that's true, the organ has the greatest musical range of pitch, but also just in terms of kind of standing outside of physics, in that other instruments seem to, if you think of striking a key on the piano, anybody knows that if you strike a key on the piano and hold the key, you'll hear the piano, but what you're actually hearing is a gradual decline in energy. If you hold that note, of course, the note will die away. And if you ultimately, you know, most times you don't experience the piano that way, because nobody really sits around and listens and waits for the 55 seconds or whatever it takes for a really loudly struck note on the bass range of a Steinway to completely decay. But of course it does decay. So that note in a small way, and perhaps to some it seems an innocent example, but that isn't fitting musical symbol for entropy. And so of course is the inability of the human voice to sustain any tone for more than a few seconds. Every instrument that relies upon human stamina, or the energy that's derived from the human body to move airwaves, is of course an elegant and a poetic symbol for entropy, because in hearing the music, we are hearing its decay. You know, it's like the ripening fruit, which is in fact rotting. The organ stands outside of that, because a note held will continue to sound as long as it's held. The system of the organ, by fulfilling the definition of what an organ is, dictates that the performer doesn't create or make any sound themselves, but manipulates a machine which makes them, or to be specific, manipulates a machine which offers the performer a set of numbers is actually the right word, except I don't mean it in the non-specific way that people often say a set of something. I actually mean a number set, But the thing that an organ does and what makes it an organ is not that it has an unlimited number of combinations, but it does that, but that it does have a limited number of combinations. It is a bounded system.
But to the layperson, one looks at that keyboard and or multiple keyboards that are a part of the unit and all of the different stops that are possible and all the ones that you're creating in various combination, and it does seem like it's infinite and that you have the choices. As Bach would point out, this is for three voices, but you can choose any number of combinations to maybe experiment with.
Yeah, but the people love to throw around the word infinite. It's a very lazy thing to do. Infinity is not a number. It is all numbers. So by dental definition, something that's infinite cannot be measured. And obviously that's not the case with the organ. The organ has a number of stops. Yes, it has a large number of stops, but it has a fixed number of stops. It doesn't have a limitless number of stops. It has 182 stops. And so 182 factorial is the number of combinations that the organ has, meaning that in order to derive the number of combinations that is possible with that organ, we would perform the following problem. 182 times 181 times 180 times 179 times 178, et cetera, times all the way down to times 1, which would give us a number, I don't remember exactly, but I think it's something like 1.212 times 10 to the 282nd or something. So it's an absurdly large number that you use scientific notation to describe. So the point of that, of course, is that And that is not just a parlor trick. It's actually a very profound thing to think about because it means two things. First of all, at least two things. First of all, it means that the organ's combinatorial, which really no other instrument is. You can't think about the clarinet in the same way. You cannot think about or approach the piano in terms of combinatoriality. In terms of the organ, you must approach it in terms of combinatoriality. That's why I'm saying that the astounding thing about the organ is not that it's an unlimited number of combinations, but that it is limited. It's just that it's bounded at such a high number, even for a comparatively small organ, that the human life is not enough time to experience all possibilities. You know, think about a small organ, a small chamber organ, which has four stops. How many combinations does it have? Well, it has 24, because 4 times 3 is 12, times 2 is 24, times 1 is 24. That's 24. But if you add a fifth stop, then it's 5 times 4, which is 20, times 3, which is 60, times 2, which is 120. Suddenly, we've gone up by a massive factor. And that's an excellent example of how fractal geometry and what used to be called the tyranny of numbers plays an incredibly important role in understanding the organ. Because it would have to follow that, of course, the value of an organ in its combinations takes time to experience. In other words, the greatest organ in the world has no worth if we're not able to spend the time to hear it. Obvious, right? Well, but then if the identity of the organ is essentially a tabula rasa, which changes depending on our input of depending on what combination we suggest, then it would have to actually follow that if we don't that without spending the time to experience each combination, we haven't experienced the organ. But then that means that in the case of a large organ like mine, or indeed many large organs, at a certain level, symbolic at least, and usually actually quite tangibly meaningful level, it means that when we sit at the organ, we are looking not only down a hallway of some 2,600 years of history, but we are actually, atheism, my own atheism aside, irrefutably confronted by a system which is greater than ourselves, a higher power, if you like. In the sense that an organ which has 1.191 times 10 to the 282nd combinations, if we are super lazy and assign only 1 minute to the audition of each combination, it'll take about 440,000 years to hear them all, meaning a 440,000 year performance of 24 hours a day continuity. And so it's very easy to see that that the organ does have an innate profundity in that its very essence can never actually be completely known by the performer.
This fascination with numbers and just the facts of numbers must have been what drew you to Johann Sebastian Bach's music.
Not at all. In fact, it's a very latter-day consideration. My interest in fractal geometry and my deep I try to make it a deep search for links in the symbols that I see in math to what I think of as sort of the universality of the organ, meaning that the organ, again, a well-designed, a properly understood organ, is a closed musical universe. It's one of the reasons I don't believe in collaboration in the strictest sense, because the organ is an anti-collaborative instrument. It doesn't require collaboration. It's the design of the instrument itself, not just my organ, but the mandate of the organ as an instrument is to be at every scale level, even if it's a small organ or a large organ. The every organ in its design attempts, in creating an organ that has a wide range of possibilities, you are also, by dint of definition, attempting to create an instrument which is self-sufficient, a self-sufficient musical universe, which doesn't require the assistance of other forces. And that's one of the paradoxes of the instrument. It is at its best when it stands alone. You can take the greatest, most powerful organ in the world and use it to accompany one singer, and it immediately will recede into the background. It's one of the paradoxes of the instrument that makes it such a potent force for, shall we say, the abuses of liturgy and religious propaganda, which have nevertheless given it such a rich sinecure over the last hundreds of years. Because, of course, the ultimate irony is of the organ is that people think it comes from church or from God. Nothing could be further from the truth. The organ, if it can be said to have anything to do with God, would have to be said to have to do with many gods, because it comes from the time of polytheism. And the Pythagorean and Greek and Babylonian and Egyptian roots of the organ not only have nothing to do with Christianity, but they have, properly understood in their historical context, everything to do with, if anything, an anticipation of the Enlightenment. And so to, for instance, imagine the city of Cologne in 1556, if you were to teleport there now, and if you managed not to be instantly burned at the stake by the locals, if you could get to the ear of some figure of authority and ask them to show you the closest thing to a computer, they would point you to the cathedral to have a look at the organ and the astronomical clock, except that the organ would be actually, from an informational standpoint, from an information theory standpoint, that other IT, which is so much more interesting than the other one. If from an information theory standpoint, the organ would be actually far more sophisticated than the astronomical clock, because the organ until 1877 was the not only most sophisticated musical instrument, but the most complex man-made device until the invention of the telephone exchange right up the street in Menlo Park. So viewed in that context, of course, the idea that this thing with gold pipes and, you know, gold-plated cherubs, obviously decorated by a gay man, the idea that that facade would actually conceal within the context of a place of Christian worship, maybe mankind's ultimate testament of musical and theoretical logic, and in many ways actually the machine which would anticipate the creation of the digital computer and the digital realm itself in later centuries, modeling as it does very effectively the electrical relay, since all organs, as I like to say, are digital organs, all pipe organs are digital in the sense that they operate in the binary domain. A note is either fully on or fully off. A stop is either fully on or fully off. And so the two controlling logical gateways, which administer one's participation or engagement with the instrument, are binary absolutes. They're either ones or zeros. In this format and in other following deeper levels of the iteration of that principle that are to be found within the instrument, the organ is absolutely a digital entity. That's true of my organ, and it's also true of the organs of the, say, 17th century.
These concerts will primarily be focusing on the music of Johann Sebastian Bach.
That's what I'm told, yes.
And to coinciding with recent release, All You Need Is Bach, your CD, what else will we hear on these SF jazz performances?
Well, you won't hear only Bach. I would be the first to point out that an evening of Bach has its limitations. Again, a paradox, because this is a limitless composer. I mean, limitless only in the sense that, of course, he has, obviously he didn't write an infinite number of works, but what I mean is that his music has a structural, it's almost an overbearing logic and hierarchical reliability, which is not to be found in the music of any other composer, and a geometrical consistency. A lot of mathematicians, Harlan Brothers amongst others, have pointed out, and actually Harlan's done a lot of great work on fractals in Bach. Fractality turns out to be harder to prove in music than in the physical realm, it turns out, for some rather interesting reasons. But there are aspects of fractal geometry in Bach's music, as well as geometry, and in fact, systems that come to us from architecture, inversion, counterpoint, retrograde, and other manipulations of reality and structure as they relate to time, that simply, it's not that they're not to be found in Chopin, but you can play Chopin without necessarily worrying about the golden mean. But if you didn't already know what the golden mean was, you would know after you play Bach if you were paying attention. And that's something that I think can't be said of any other composer, at least none that I've experienced. But I mean, you asked about other composers. I'm hoping to play some music by Vaughan Williams, possibly Leonard Bernstein. There may be music by César Franck, and I'll probably improvise for good or ill.
Well, I'm sure it'll be for good for everyone. You pride yourself on being very accessible to your audiences, not an unusual thing, and to meet and greet. But what I think is unusual, and I think actually good marketing and creates a good connection with the audience, is to do this before the concert rather than after.
Well, I, you know, it depends on the venue and it depends on the place of the place. It depends on the structure of the place and, you know, the end of the day and so on. But I mean, when you play the organ, you, after all, are generally confronted with people who are walking away. After all, what is the great solo moment of any church organist's Sunday? You know, it's the postlude. The moment at which the organist gets to make their statement is also the moment at which they realize that they're playing for people who would rather go have coffee with people they hate than to listen to their work. So part of being an organist is contending with the horrible reality that your instrument is institutional, and that whether it's, and that's true, by the way, whether it's a church organ, whether it's a synagogue organ, whether the instrument you're playing happens to be in a college where it might be used for graduations, or it's in a radio situation, or it's in a theater where it was used for coming silent films, the organ is always for something else. And I, as a person, I used to say artist, I like to think of myself more as an artisan now, because not only because I have, as happens when you get older, you start to doubt your artistry, but also because I think there are a lot of things about organ playing properly understood that that certainly do have very much to do with engineering, and particularly in my case, because I'm also the lead engineer on this international touring organ, which is a giant project that requires constant maintenance and organization supervision and all this, so that I spend a lot of time, you know, engineering the thing, which I enjoy very much, and which I should enjoy as its designer. You know, there comes a point at which you get frustrated with the institutionality, though, of the instrument, that the instrument always seems to be attached to something else. It's never simply exists within its own context for its own right and sake. And that's what I want for the organ. I want it to be a medium of personal expression, not something that's attached to Christianity, not something that's attached to some building where you have to go to hear it. It doesn't come to you. This is not the model of the way music is consumed in our world. And if we want the organ to have a voice and seat at that table, or more properly, if we want the organist to have a seat at that table, since the organist is the fundamental question, not the organ, then it's very important that the instrument continue to be innovated with, and that serious thought goes into the way that it's presented in the context that the public in which the public has the chance to receive it, whether they choose to or not. And it's my job to make sure that that is as individual and as innovative as possible.